OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Okay, welcome along to the football show. I'm sure you may have seen over the last few days the Women's Super League has fallen foul to the COVID crisis. Later on, we'll talk to Louise Quinn. She is, as well as being Republic of Ireland defender, she is an Arsenal player and her season has come to a shuddering halt. So we'll talk to Louise later on. In the meantime, well, as he predicted, pretty close to when this whole thing broke out, Brazil has not handled the COVID crisis expertly, to say the least. I am talking about Tim Vickery, who's on the line now. Hiya, Tim. Long time no speak.
Indeed, yeah. And things have got no better. In fact, they've got a considerable bit worse. And as you just kind of put up there, I think what has happened in Brazil over the last couple of months will live long in the annals of human incompetence.
Brazil currently leads the world in daily deaths with more than 800 a day. Even the US and Jair Bolsonaro's good friend Donald Trump have decided to halt all travel from Brazil. Latest I checked, Tim, about 375,000 coronavirus infections, over 23,000 deaths. Many fear Brazil's true toll is much higher.
Yeah, and the official toll now is, and we're waiting for today's numbers, but it's 24,500, and it's going up at 1,000 a day. And this doesn't seem to be a peak. It's a plateau. It looks as if the numbers are high and they're going to stay high. There's no evidence of coming down the other side of the hill yet.
A University of Washington study warned that Brazil's total death toll could rise fivefold. They're talking about 125,000 by early August, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and let's hope that that they're wrong. I fear, because the death toll now, as we've all learnt during this situation, the death toll now is the consequence of actions that have been taken 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. We had a bizarre look into Brazil's central government last week, because as a result of a fight that's going on inside the government, we got to watch a 2-hour video of President Bolsonaro and his ministers. And it is the most extraordinary collection of lunatics that you could possibly imagine. This is April the 22nd. So what's happening then is having a direct consequence on the death toll now. And in this 2-hour meeting, they don't seem concerned. It's hardly on the agenda as a health crisis. It's on the agenda from the point of view of the environmental minister, of using it as a smokescreen while the media is looking the other way to try and get through some unpopular and very controversial legislation. And from the point of view of Bolsonaro, and this gets to the heart of the bizarre Bolsonaro phenomenon. You've got to remember, Brazil is divided into states. It's a little bit like the United States of South America. 27 states make up the country, and it's the state governors who have brought in measures of social distancing or lockdown, and they've been consistently undermined by the activities of the president at the center, who doesn't like the social distancing thing, doesn't want it, wants to get rid of it. And he said during this meeting that as far as he's concerned, it's the state governors who are bringing in measures of social distancing and lockdown are doing it for ideological reasons in order to impose terror on the Brazilian people and impose communism. And you really are talking about sociopathic deliriums.
Yes, he is very much far right. He's been in office since January of 2019. I remember when we spoke in March, it was mainly with regard to how football was coping at that stage. They were naive times in many respects. And there were pictures of Bolsonaro shaking hands with supporters and saying everything is okay and this is just going to blow over. Now, I had assumed, and I'm not checking Brazilian news all that often in the midst of everything going on now, but I had just assumed that somewhere across the subsequent 2 months, with the debt toll rising, with the information which was just unavoidable from all around the world, he would have changed tack on this. What does he say if and when media say to him, President Bolsonaro, the debt toll is rising, this is incredibly serious, we're not acting the way any other countries are choosing to act? Does he think this is all a hoax? I mean, this is madness.
Yeah, and when he was the debt toll was put to him, he just said, "So what? What do you expect me to do about it?" He doesn't have any of the flexibility even of Trump, and so many of the things that he does are out of the Trump playbook, like this chloroquine anti-malaria medicine that he's trying to say. In fact, according to a health minister who he sacked, Bolsonaro flirted with the idea of altering the official information on this drug to say that it is effective against COVID-19 based on no scientific evidence whatsoever. He's really boxed himself into a hole on this situation. There are threats to his rule inside Brazil, although you wonder whether he's got a lot of the police forces fairly well locked down. Perhaps the thing that could weaken him is the country becoming an international outcast, and it's on that way. You know, if even his ally Donald Trump will put the knife in and stop people from Brazil traveling to the United States, you wonder at what point this means less money for the business people and more and moves to try and get rid of him.
Mm. He's gone through two health ministers thus far. You mentioned the one who was fired, another resigned, clearly aghast to what was happening. The media now are refusing to go to his residence for briefings. They're being attacked.
Some of the media, the most of the free-to-air TV channels, with the exception of Global, but a lot of the free-to-air TV channels are solidly supporters. But the thing with the Bolsonaro movement, in fact, one of the reasons that he's boxed himself into this hole, and he did say, you know, three months ago or so, that he was imagining a death toll of something like 800, and he could shrug that off. You know, now it's coming up to 25,000 and rising. It's harder to do that. One of the reasons he's boxed himself into this hole is that in order to mobilize his base, there must constantly be the creation of enemies. There must. And that's the way that you keep your base mobilized. And part of his enemies are the press. It's becoming dangerous for some of the press to stand there outside his presidential palace, because no one with any great deal of sanity is going to be part of a conglomeration at this moment. But the people who don't seem to have a great deal of sanity are the solid base of support that he still has, who are still meeting up and having their demonstrations. I read last week about a university professor who had been on a Bolsonaro supporter had been on these demonstrations, calling for the complete liberation of the economy and so on, and the end of social distancing. And I saw that this university professor had died of COVID-19. I found it hard to shed too much of a tear for him.
So it really is extraordinary. There was a military dictatorship from about the 60s through to, I think, 1985. Over the subsequent
64 to 85. That's okay. Right.
Over the subsequent 35 years, has Brazil generally elected right-leaning politicians? Is it a right-leaning country?
No. It hasn't. It's elected, I would say, centre-left. And even the Workers' Party, the PT, who won four consecutive mandates, and certainly and I was born in 65, compared to the Labour Party social democracy that I grew up with, I think the Workers' Party were to the right of them. It's very, very much centre-left, really, working within the system. And one of the problems with that is that, as a very well-placed source told me a decade or so ago, Brazil runs on corruption. It's not a question of this political party or that political party. It runs on corruption. Mm. The World Cup was in fact, I think that the protests in 2013 during the Confederations Cup are probably the start of this moment, the start of what we're living now. There is a lot of indignation about the level of corruption. Now, it's very hard to govern without it. There are so many political parties in the Brazilian system that in order to put together a coalition, kind of effectively, you've got to buy them. It's hard to govern inside the system without corruption. Now, that's something that Mr. Bolsonaro is now finding out, because now in order to head off impeachment, he's doing the kind of thing that he always decried. The kind of thing, the old corrupt politics, when you go to the parties of, it's called the center, but parties who don't really represent anyone apart from their own personal interests, and you give them positions and so on. And Bolsonaro is now finding that in order to govern, in order for his government to stay alive, he has to do that. But so much of the support for his, I mean, there are different branches of support for the Bolsonaro administration, but a lot of it came from this indignation of the corruption involved in the political process.
You mentioned there the 27 states across Brazil, and that clearly there were people with their heads screwed on ruling some of those 27 states. What kind of variance is there across Brazil in terms of things like lockdown and social distancing? How does, say, where you are in Rio differ to the north of the country?
There are huge differences because Brazil is of continental dimensions, and there are lots of climate variations and variations in the strength of the health service. The coronavirus is especially strong in Rio and São Paulo and in some cities in the north and northeast. In other places, it's getting there, but it hasn't been as severe yet. Most have been on social distancing. Some have recently gone into lockdown. And the problem with the social distancing is that it's voluntary, and it's very much dependent, you know, because the virus is an enemy that you don't see. It's dependent on getting trustworthy information from the center. So the first health minister that we had, the one who was sacked, Mandetta, was giving daily press conferences that the population really listened to, when he was stressing the need for social distancing. And there's a percentage of the number of people who obey it, which in order to flatten the curve, I'm told, it has to be around 70%. And he was saying, well, look, we're seeing in Rio today that number has dropped alarmingly. And that had an effect. Well, people believed him. They trusted him. But Bolsonaro got rid of him because of this question of social distancing. He's against it. He's in favor of the complete liberation of the economy. He doesn't seem to understand that the best way to free the economy and to save the economy is dealing with the health crisis. Mm. He doesn't seem to grasp that simple truth. So once Mandetta was sacked and we didn't have those daily press conferences, and Bolsonaro continually saying that it's not necessary and continually going out and greeting his supporters and holding his regular demonstrations, that meant that the numbers obeying this social distancing were falling below 50%, which means you're really not doing anything to flatten the curve. So that's really been the problem in Brazil, the lack of a coherent message. But also, maybe there should have been lockdown, perhaps certainly in São Paulo, and the governor kept on mentioning it. But you get the question there: how to enforce it? You know, in order to have the lockdown, one or two states have done it in the north. But in order to have the lockdown, you've got to have the police on side. And there's just this little question mark in São Paulo: would the police enforce it? How much of the police are kind of taking the Bolsonaro line? So the news now is that they're going to start easing social distancing and opening up more of the economy from next month. Now, that's something that countries in Europe have done once the curve is on the way, once the numbers are on the way down, which isn't the case in Brazil. And in this case, the fact that Brazil can watch what's happening in Europe is probably negative, because, you know, they see football starting, for example, in Germany. Well, why don't we do that? And they see people back on the streets in Spain. Well, why don't we do that? Well, there's an easy answer to that, you know, which is that the numbers in Brazil are still going up. But it makes it much, much harder to enforce a voluntary social distancing if people are seeing that over the other side of the Atlantic, people are coming out of quarantine. So I'm not expecting any good news on the health front in the short term.
I was taken through the favela 6 years ago at the World Cup by an Irish charity worker in Rio. I can only imagine how difficult it will be to contain if it starts to run riot there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the two new areas of penetration into the poorer areas of the city, of the big cities, you know, where, as you saw, people live in very close proximity, both in terms of the number of people living under one roof and the proximity of that roof to the next roof. But it's also spreading internally to the smaller cities and towns.
Yeah. What's the health service like?
Well, there is a national public health service based on the NHS. It's nowhere near as good as the NHS, and it's nowhere near as well financed as the NHS. Even with the problems of the NHS in my country of birth, but it is there. It's been run down over recent years when there's been a cap on public spending. That's another reason that Brazil has performed so badly, I think. That cap on public spending has reduced Brazil's capacity to respond to a crisis. But at least it's there. At least there is a health system there. What we haven't seen so far is the state commandeered a private system. Now that would prove very, very controversial, and you wonder if that's something that may happen in the future. They've tried to set up lots of field hospitals just to increase the number of hospital beds that they have available. So that there have been responses, but you know, this it really hasn't been the finest hour of the health ministry. I have a friend, a Brazilian, who works for one of the big high tech companies in Silicon Valley, and with all the data services that they provide, he tells me that they've been helping health services all across the world. But it's been impossible to help in Brazil because the whole thing is such a mess. The whole chains of command and the conflict inside between promoting social distancing and not promoting social distancing. I suspect in years to come, if and when we all get through it, it's going to make some cracking mini-series and so on, you know, to get to the bottom of the human incompetence that has led to this ever-rising death toll.
It sounds terrifying. I will ask you about football in a moment. What of the media? I can imagine you, by the way, just tearing your hair out in the midst of all this. When you turn on your television and do a vague scan, I don't know, is there like a Fox News? Is it that entrenched over there? But are there people on the TV just decrying this whole thing? You know,
yeah,
experts,
in fact,
saying what is going on?
TV Global, which traditionally has leant rightwards on TV Global, was set up in 65, really with the help of the military dictatorship. So that was its politics, but it's really out for Bolsonaro. The kind of downmarket free to air TVs are quite pro. But the serious newspapers are increasingly against, increasingly angered by it. So, the conflict means that we're living in it is the Chinese curse of living in very interesting times.
Mm. He's about 18 months into his term. How long does a president get?
4 years.
Okay.
So it's a 4-year term. The big thing is re-election. What happened? Because that's the aim of every government that takes over for its 4-year term, you know, to win a second 4-year term. Now, Brazilian politics moves very, very quickly. It's very, very fluid. At the moment, I can't see any hope of his re-election. He still has support, but that support, which maybe 3 months ago was a solid kind of 35%, is now down to 25%.
Right.
And it's a kind of far-right populism without any economic populism. It's kind of he has an economics minister who just wants to privatise everything and flexibilise the relationships, flexibilise still further labour relationships. So there's nothing really there that they in economic terms, they don't really have anything to offer the poor. Where they've got that they got votes from poor people was the kind of the tough talk on crime and the social conservatism, which plays very, very well in Brazil at the moment. The kind of evangelical lobby is probably the evangelical Christians. It's probably the strongest support base that he has at the moment.
Okay. So what of football then amidst this mess and with 27 different approaches potentially right across the country?
Well, that's it. Now, when we put the Brazilian calendar is very complicated. The first few months are devoted to the state championships, one for each of the 27 states. And then, in theory, early May, the national championship starts. There are four national divisions. But when we paused in mid-March, we were just kind of coming towards the home straight of the state championships. So those state federations who get their income from their state championships, they don't want to be forgotten. They want to get those state championships up and running. So you know, that does depend entirely piecemeal on what local government thinks in the states. There are strong attempts in Rio to get football up and running, but it's becoming nasty. Last week, Flamengo, who are the current national continental champions and the club with the biggest support base in the country, together with Vasco da Gama, the Flamengo and Vasco presidents, they went to Brasilia to meet, to have lunch with Bolsonaro to try and get his help. And Bolsonaro is on record as saying he wants football back as soon as possible. He can't see the problems. The athletes are fit young men. They're not going to die. It does kind of ignore. And the saddest thing here is that 3 weeks or so ago, Flamengo, their massage specialist, Jorginho, died of coronavirus. Now, he'd been the club's massage specialist since 1980. He'd been part of Brazil's World Cup winning backup team in 2002. And even his death of coronavirus hasn't put the brake on. Now, Flamengo have money. They have money to kind of put their players in a bubble and carry out tests. But obviously, they can't play on their own. You know, and football is a collective endeavor. It's not Coca-Cola wanting to take all the market share from Pepsi-Cola. It's, you know, you need your opposition to play. So of the big four teams in Rio, Flamengo together with Vasco are pushing and they've started training. The other two big teams, Fluminense and Botafogo, are not on board with this at all, and especially Botafogo. Botafogo is saying, you know, any effort to try and get football up and running at the moment is tantamount to homicide. It just isn't safe. This has led to a real spat, because then the Flamengo president said, well, you know, look at our record in recent years and look at their record. What he's referring to there is results on the field, where Flamengo have done much better than Botafogo. But that exposed an easy flank for Botafogo, because you will remember at the start of last year there was a fire at Flamengo's training ground and 10 of their young hopeful stars burnt to death. You know, so Botafogo could then fire back, well, you know, is that what you mean when you say look at our track record and look at your track record? Because it seems to show a lack of respect for life in your track record. So that's getting really nasty. The big teams in São Paulo, which is the other main football city of the country, the big four there are kind of aligned in, no, we're not coming back. It's too soon. And there was a very, very wise communique, a statement from the Corinthians club saying, you know, look at us and look at Germany. You know, Germany came back when everyone was on the same page. Everyone in politics and the levels of government and everyone in football, they're all on the same page. They've all thought that, you know, the worst is over. And under certain health conditions, it's all right to come back. In Brazil, the politics, there's disputes going on between a different level of governments, and there's even more fragmentation amongst the clubs. There's rows going on amongst the clubs. So, and Corinthians said, well, you know, if we come back now, you know, it's almost certainly premature. And what that means is we'll just go into another enforced stoppage, and it'll take longer to get back to normal. And football is only sustainable as a business once the once the virus is under control and those numbers are going down. And that would seem to me to be a very wise position. But the economic pressures and the political pressures are such that efforts are afoot to try and get the ball rolling in Brazil. In that way, I think, you know, watching the Germany experience has been negative, you know, because watching football take place in Germany just makes them want to scratch the itch even more over here in Brazil.
No doubt. And just the last one then, Tim, obviously the Premier League are in a rush to come back for really the same reasons as the Bundesliga, because television money basically is so huge. Is television money similarly huge in Brazil? Like, how does Brazilian football work if there are no bums on seats and gate receipts? Is the TV money good enough?
Yeah, it can work with TV money. Okay. TV money is big. Once you get lower down the scale, that becomes a problem. I mean, some clubs in Bolivia, for example, which is the poorest league in South America, are saying, you know, it's just not viable for us to open without bums on seats, because in our case, the TV money isn't enough. Mm. In Brazil, it's a huge country. TV rights are pretty, you know, the clubs get money from that. It is a worrying economic format scenario for the clubs, because the future for South America's economies looks very, very bleak. You know, after the 2008 financial crisis, the exceptional growth of China, it came to the rescue, you know, especially of South America, because China was buying up Brazilian South American raw materials. You can't really see that this time, and so for an export based model, worrying times ahead. And that applies to football as well, because the clubs, in order to balance the books, they've got to sell players. Now, the currencies are taking a hit over here at the moment, which does mean for every player they sell to Europe or wherever, they get more bang for their buck. Mm. But the potential problem there is there going to be a market? Are the European clubs still going to be buying, and are they still going to be paying the same amount as they were paying in the past? So worrying times in health terms, worrying times in economic terms, and worrying times for the economics of football clubs.
Tim, fantastic as ever. Try and stay safe in the midst of it all.
I've got a lovely flat with gorgeous views. There are many, many millions of people in circumstances much more unfavourable than mine.
Tim Vickery, thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
Now, you're very welcome back. I mentioned that you would have seen the news during the past week or so that the Women's Super League and Championships have been cancelled. They end immediately. For more, let's go over to Louise Quinn of Arsenal and, of course, the Republic of Ireland as well. Louise, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. How's things?
Very well. Are you up in Durham, or are you hanging out in London, or what's the plan?
I couldn't actually make that trip, but something came up, so I gave it a miss.
League cancelled. Was this a surprise? Was this on the cards? Were there genuine hopes this would be salvaged? Give us the reaction.
Yeah, I think so. I suppose in general, us as the players and as the club, I think we started to figure that it wasn't just going to be likely that it was going to come back. So before the announcement, we did have a bit of an idea, but we literally had calls every week. The club were on calls all the time, so they really were trying to push everything that they could, to make it possible to do it. And, you know, in some ways it could have been possible for more clubs than others. So, like, you know, Arsenal obviously were pushing for it, but they would have, you know, a bit more of the resources to really back it up, whereas in maybe some other clubs kind of wouldn't. And it did just start getting to that stage, I think, for us where, us as players, we didn't want it to obviously come as a detriment to our health if they weren't able to kind of support it and get testing consistently, but also then to disrupt next season. And, you know, even as you've seen, I think, like even in the German league, I think there has been quite a few injuries already, and it started getting to that stage where if they tried to cramp all those games into a short period of time, I think it just would have been, just not great for a lot of teams and potentially would do longer damage.
So as opposed to the Premier League, where there's about £1 billion in TV money and just ample resources for testing and any other issues which arose, those resources are just not there for the Women's Super League.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's obviously the place where we want to get to. But yeah, at that thing, there is I suppose, not as much source of money at stake in that way. Mm. You know, but there's still a lot of fears and worries about, you know, some of the clubs and obviously then it's just really positive to see that the Premier League is getting back in that way and we'll hopefully be able to kind of keep that going, because just in general we need to be able to keep clubs above water, and that's both men's and women's. Mm. You know, I feel like if this didn't go ahead, I feel like there still would have been a few men's clubs that would have been in a lot of trouble. So, you know, I really think they're trying to push that as much as they can, and, you know, by the sounds of it and the looks of it, it seems to be going very well in that way. So, you know, that's obviously really exciting. But yeah, listen, we did really want it back, and I think they did pretty much exhaust every, you know, every possibility, and, you know, we just kept going week to week thinking we were going to hear news and then not hear news, and, you know, you were keeping hope for a while, and then it started to get tough then, you know, really, really tough, mentally in a way as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And what about your own situation? Were players furloughed, or Arsenal in a position to look after you? I'm sure there's a variance right across the league.
Yeah. Thankfully, Arsenal were able to continue to look after us, right, and everything. And then even in terms of how our coaches were, so especially our S&Cs, and that's, you know, that's even one of our own Irish, Owen Clarkin, who was with Dundalk. He's our S&C at the moment. And again, they went above and beyond to make sure that we had everything we needed. Changing our programs every couple of weeks. We had weekly calls, you know, with our S&Cs and stuff like that. So, you know, they completely kept on top of us, and, you know, in both ways, they gave us all the tools that we needed, but that, you know, didn't force it upon us, you know, because it was difficult. There's some days to try keep that scheduling is great, but then there's some days where, yeah, lockdown sometimes became too much, and you just don't want to go out and train sometimes. So, they found a great balance for us, I think. So, you know, it's been really nice in that way.
Very, very easy, I'm sure, to take a day off, because what difference will it make?
Sometimes, yeah, but the guilt comes on, because you're still trying to eat like an athlete as well, and in terms of a lot of carbs and a lot of food. So, sometimes those days off weren't warranted. It was an extremely tough situation, but in some ways I actually really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the freedom of all the kind of training I could do, and you know, doing it on my own time, and yeah, some days just changing my schedule up a little bit, so doing the same amount of training but just kind of changing days. So you know, it was actually at times a really nice kind of freedom. Mm. You know, of not being told what to do, what to wear, when to eat, you know, so that's kind of one of those things that always seems to happen. So it was nice just to kind of, for me to take control of that. And so I enjoyed that.
And Louise, have you guys been in at the training ground? The men are obviously back. There's been no need, I guess, to drag you all back in.
Yeah, no, haven't been at the training ground since before that international break. Mm. For a little while after. So as soon as we came back from international break, there were still some of the rehab girls were still there, and were just about able to still go in, but it was, you know, it was still under, you know, this is before the real lockdown came. And so this preferred us that came back from international break to not go to the training ground. So yeah, I literally haven't been there at all. And I think even in terms of how it started with the men, so they did go in a bit earlier to do individual training, because they were getting hassled too much in the parks, apparently. So yeah, they got to go to the training ground, but it was very, very strict. They were, you know, they had to, I don't know, park 10 meters away from each other and have a timed entrance and this, that, and the other. So it was, it was proven quite difficult at that stage already. So, you know, they are pretty strict about it.
So that's you off in your summer holidays now, effectively, isn't it?
Oh yeah, summer holidays now, yeah. No, it is. It is the off season now, so it is kind of that thing of where, yeah, you do kind of need to, you can kind of switch off completely in that way, just in terms of mentally now as well. you know, I'll definitely kind of continue training and continue, you know, doing my bits. But at least now you're kind of just able to prepare, you know, get prepared for, you know, hopefully the restart at like the normal date in September.
And who knows? I mean, that is still a hope, which is the crazy thing. Like, we could have a second surge here. We don't know where we'll be.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it is that little bit of who knows. And but, you know, listen, that's the same for everyone. So at the moment, yeah, I suppose we're just in that frame of mind where it is our off season, and yeah. So obviously, no, you know, there'll be no traveling and stuff involved, but I think it's just, you know, it'll be great now just to kind of switch off completely a little bit in that way. And then, you know, for us to be able to head back to, you know, to our families if they're able to do so, you know, where there's still a lot of the girls that were still around that still aren't able to get home.
Yeah. Are you going to come home yourself for the summer?
Yeah. I should be getting home for the summer. Right. I'm just trying to suss it out and just do it in the, you know, in the best way. Yeah. And
even,
you know,
getting on a plane right now is not a great thought, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so if I go about it, you know, I try to do more of a boat trip, you know, and have the car and do this, that, and the other. So yeah. Just that little bit of a bit of flexibility and stuff like that. So I've seen on some of the boats, it's only like car and like trucks and stuff that can go on. So that, you know, that could be quite a good option with less people. But yeah, it is a bit daunting, but you know, I think at the moment things are going well in the right direction, and you know, that's the most important thing. But yeah, it would be something I'll consider. I'm not going to jump into it, you know, until I really have something sorted out.
Yeah, well, look, I'll be honest with you. It's not like you're missing out on huge parties and great times back here. There's not much going on.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, and it's a little bit hotter in London as well. So. Yeah.
And have you found it tough? Like, are you like apartment and you know, bored out of your mind, or has it been okay?
No, it's been okay. I think it's been times where I've lucked out that I actually have some great parks around me. You know, and I kind of automatically just kind of adopted the Irish way of a 2 kilometer rule. Even though that wasn't a thing, so thankfully I still had that, you know, in my area. So, you know, so was able to do that sort of stuff. Didn't even go into the, you know, into our little city that much, and yeah, just kind of kept my head down and kept busy. And that's the thing. Actually, trained quite hard as well. And unfortunately, we only have like a tiny little patch of grass around the side of the apartment block, but. I pretty much took that territory on kind of sunny days and stuff like that.
Put the flag down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What? Yeah, no. So it's been, as in, under the circumstances, I've, you know, it's been okay. And you know, I think as well, it's just as long as, you know, everyone around me as well has been doing okay and has been, you know, stayed healthy and everything. So to me, that's the, you know, that's the most important.
What's the word on the league? Are they going to go points per game, or are they going to just null and void it? I think there's on certain algorithms that there's various ways to do it. Chelsea might overtake Man City on a certain points per game method. So any word on what they're going to do?
No, that's not finalised yet, but I think it is going to be points per game, I think. So as far as we're aware, I think most people have said, like, you know, not to null or void the season. Just, you know, there's been a lot achieved on all levels. You know, but I think in general then, so that would leave us in third spot.
Yeah.
You know, which is then very, very tough in terms of, yeah, Champions League. So we've you know, obviously qualified, and they're still making that decision on Champions League as well.
How many go through?
Two, just top two.
Okay, because you semi-finalists this year, weren't you?
We were just about to go into the quarters. Against PSG.
Oh, that game, that game didn't happen, did it? Not okay.
That was supposed to happen in March.
Yeah,
the end of March. So I think that's, you know, that's obviously proven quite difficult, but I think they do in general want to continue, try continue a Champions League at some stage if they can. But again, that's one of those just up in the air and doesn't work. And as you've seen, they're playing in Germany, in France, they voided the season weeks ago. So we're all on completely different levels and coming into it. So at the moment, you kind of don't know who's going to be feeling it the best, really. But if there's still hope there, that would be great to still kind of play those games.
Yeah, I actually thought the PSG game had happened, but because the French Prime Minister has said there's no professional games happening in France behind closed doors or otherwise until at least September. So even if there were hopes somehow to reignite the Champions League, maybe in August or something, like when you're talking about different countries, that's just a near impossibility. So that's out the window as well.
At the moment it is. It's proven very tough. I can imagine then the German teams are mad to play. They'll be fit as fiddles and so that's a really tough one. Another one of those decisions that you kind of have to wait on, but again, it may not be until at least August, September maybe. That'll try to do that.
Meanwhile, from an Irish point of view, I mean, Euro 2021 is really within touching distance qualification, that is, if things go well. The games have been moved, so the away trip to Germany is now 19th of September, all going well. Ukraine is 23rd of October, and the Germans come to Dublin on December 1st, is the plan. Obviously, this is a live document and everything could change. What was your reaction when they made the decision to move the Euros from 2021 to 2022? Their logic was they did not want the thing completely overshadowed by the men's European Championships, which have been delayed. You can see the logic in the decision. Were you happy with it, or would you like to just crack on in 2021?
No, I think I see the logic in it.
Yeah.
Even just in general, not to have to try rush these sort of things as well. I feel like for all of us, 2020 is just void and null as it is. So kind of just to push everything forward. An extra year on it, obviously it is really, really tough, and it's when you try to think about that, it's a whole extra year. But in the grand scheme of things, I think it is the best decision. If we try to cramp everything in as well, I think it's going to cause enough problems in itself. And it's all depending on how, I suppose, these seasons go now in the men's league, to see if this can actually work. And to start our season and see if it can actually work out. Again, you still may face problems. And then at the same time, the Olympics as well also being pushed. So there would be a lot of crossover in terms of players and everything going on. So it is. It's obviously tough. I have to keep myself fit for another year again on top of that. But listen, it'll just be if and when we get there, it's going to be kind of even better to have come over this and to have gotten there. But it was just really, really nice seeing those dates today, just to kind of see that we can play the rest of our qualifiers, hopefully at some stage, all going well. So, it definitely gave a little bit of hope today. Just that things are going in the right direction and that they're thinking about it, that they're, putting plans in place.
Yeah, it's one of the first times I've seen new fixtures for anything announced. There's just a blanket ban and nothing nailed down in the future, to suddenly see December 1st, Dublin, Germany. Okay, that is definitely a fillip for everyone. And you do own the summer of 2022 then, and the way the World Cup captured the imagination, if Ireland could get to a Euros and you have a blank summer, it could really do the game here wonders. So I guess there is a real logic in the decision. What about your Arsenal contract? Is that up anytime soon?
Yeah, so that is up at the end of the season.
Okay.
It's all in talks at the moment.
Right.
But it's just been a really difficult one, because it's been unsure whether they've needed to extend the contracts or just everything. It's been so up in the air, so technically it ends at the end of May, so obviously now that the league's over, but then the fact that Champions League is still a thing. So I'm in talks with them at the moment, and hopefully I can get that sorted as well.
Yeah, I guess you'd like to stay. It seems like you've enjoyed it. So is that, you have an agent and they go in and chat with the club, or how does all that work?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, same standard as how it works. That's exactly it. Yeah.
And the agent rings you and you say, "I want more," and then they go back and fight that kind of track.
Exactly. Yeah. More.
Okay, well, hopefully that gets sorted. That is a strange time to be at the end of your contract and trying to negotiate where nobody knows where things stand. But I do get the impression you really enjoyed Arsenal and you know, you'd love to stick around London for another couple of years.
Yeah, it's just a great club, you know, to be at, and massive success. And then the fact now that we have been able to finish the season, you want to be able to, to kind of start afresh again. And see how you get on. But yeah, listen, it's been to say that I've been here for 3 years already is crazy.
Yeah.
And I've literally enjoyed every minute of it. So yeah.
It's gone by quickly. There's probably gonna be teammates who will you might not see again now. That's professional sport, there might be a couple of others, end of contract, and you don't really get a chance to say goodbye in person or have a team night out and all that kind of stuff. It'll be back in August and 2-3 players could easily be missing. That's a weird thing.
Yeah, no, it is. That's a sad thought. And you know, you could be in worse positions. We had a lot of girls that were, you know, that were injured and stuff as well. So we literally haven't even, you know, played a game in a long time. And so now it's just like the season's ended and they're not able to kind of put, you know, they're expected to obviously be putting the jersey back on before the season was ending. It's just a long wait, and I think that is that it kind of keeps you on tender hooks at the moment as well, definitely. But I suppose it's the name of the game, and again, you know, it could be at the end of the day as well, it could be a far worse kind of situation, I guess, as well. But it's just so complicated, you can't even comment. You know, it's one of those where things change day to day, week to week, all the time. So it's strange, and obviously you want that kind of little end of season party. And you know, and I think we were going to push on and hopefully kind of get ourselves, you know, back into that Champions League position, and if not, kind of, you know, really push for that first spot as well. So you just kind of now we'll never know. But you know, I think it's better that they're not avoiding the season in that way as well. I think there's been a lot achieved from it. So
listen, have a good summer. Thanks so much for checking in. Hopefully the contract stuff gets sorted and we might talk to you in a couple of months at hopefully the start of a new season. Louise Quinn, thanks so much.
Lovely, thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.